Thank you, folks. Go ahead and have a seat. Give us just a moment. All right. This is the time set for oral argument in case number 1CATX 250002 MCCC District, excuse me, versus Maricopa County et al. These proceedings are being video and audio recorded, and they're also being live streamed. For the sake of the folks who are watching remotely, please, when you approach the podium, state your name and identify the party you represent so that everybody knows who's speaking and why and who they're speaking for. Each side does have 20 minutes. You're not required to use that, but if you feel the need to, certainly please do. Appellate's counsel, you are responsible for watching the clock to reserve any time for rebuttal. You're welcome to tell us. We may mention that you're hitting your rebuttal time, but we're not going to guard it for you. Also, please keep in mind, we have read the briefs. We've studied the issues, we've read the record, and we conferenced the case earlier this morning. So we are very familiar with the issues. So what I'd suggest is really trying to focus your argument on why you think, how we should resolve it and why, and the exact resolution you're looking for. Counsel, with that?
Good morning, Your Honors. Mitchell Turbinson on behalf of Maricopa County Community College District. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. This case is not about whether taxpayers were entitled to refunds. They were. It is not about whether taxpayers were entitled to interest on those refunds. They were. And it is not about whether the county may ever recoup overpaid taxes from taxing districts. In some circumstances, it unquestionably may. This case is about whether the county may ignore the limits the legislature imposed on that recoupment authority. The legislature enacted two separate statutes here. Section 42-16214 governs judgments. It permits recoupment of the amount of the judgment and requires subtraction from amounts due to taxing jurisdictions in the next fiscal year. Section 42-18061 governs changes in the tax roll pursuant to law. Unlike Section 16214, Section 18061 authorizes a credit only for overpaid taxes that were distributed and entitles the county treasurer to credit only in the next accounting after the repayment. The county's response contains perhaps the most important admission in this case. On page 17 of its response brief, it tells the court that its practice is the same, whether the refunds are due to a court judgment, settlement of a claim, error correction, or administrative change to valuation or classification. That admission drives this appeal.
Well, counsel, the only issue before us isn't what they may do in other circumstances or other situations. It's what happened here. So let's talk about what happened here.
Thank you, Your Honor. So what happened here and what was recognized in the tax court is that the judgment in the Kassemeyer action did two things. First, it adjudicated and granted a judgment for the first year of each of the classes involved. That there was a tax misclassification. It then dismissed all of the other future years that would have resulted in overpaid taxes.
With a condition.
With a condition that by operation of law, which recognizes Section 18061, a change in tax rolls will result in refunds being paid out pursuant to 18061. Now, the tax court, which is the same judge who entered the Kassemeyer action,
it orders the tax code to be changed for that initial year for each class, correct?
Correct.
Then as a matter of law, doesn't that change carry forward to all future I mean, that's the bottom line. It ordered the change that's causing the future year tax changes.
Correct. By operation of law, what it was recognizing in dismissing all damages or all refunds owed for all of the subsequent years for each class is that that's not the part of the amount of the judgment, which is the operative phrase here in 16214. 18061 is what deals with how those refunds operate.
So let me ask, go ahead.
Would you agree with me, though, that as to the subsequent years that are addressed, and I think it's paragraph 15 of the judgment that we're talking about here, that in these subsequent years that where there would be refunds with statutory interest, that those class members would only be receiving those refunds with statutory interest as a function of the judgment? In other words, but for the existence of this judgment and paragraph 15 specifically, those taxpayers would not be receiving those refunds and interest if they're entitled to it?
I disagree with that. I think however a taxpayer receives a refund for overpaid taxes, they're entitled to interest, whether that's through a judgment or through in some circumstances, they're entitled to interest. There are certain exclusions to that, and Section 42.16.259 speaks to that. But that's the entitlement to taxpayer interest. Now, this case is not about whether taxpayers are entitled to interest. This case is about the recoupment power from the county to the district and to all special taxing districts. And so the focus here is on what statute is governing that recoupment power.
Go ahead.
And the tax court here is the same tax court that entered this judgment, recognized both statutes apply. So, and the county recognized it in the briefing below that both statutes applied. So 16214 is not the only statute applicable here. There's a recognition that all future classes that were dismissed, or the overpayments for the refunds that were dismissed from the in the judgment in the Kastmeier action, operated under 18061.
Okay, so let's say for an assumption that the court decides that the subsequent tax years are also part of the judgment. Is that the end of the case? Because how do we move past it? Because then we know under the 16214, the more specific statute, that the amount is supposed to be subtracted from the amounts due to the taxing jurisdictions. It's in the next fiscal year in proportion to the amount, and that the interest at the legal rate has to be paid. So do you have, if we conclude, because it seems to me the core of your argument has to be 15, and any money paid under paragraph 15 isn't subject to the judgment. Because if it is subject to the judgment, don't we just look at 214?
So if the court were to look just at 16214.
No, I ask, if we say that it's just that it is subject to the judgment, then why would we look past 214?
If the court makes the determination that even amounts dismissed from the judgment are actually amounts awarded under the judgment, which we would contend conflicts with, for example, the Stone Creek case we cited, that anything dismissed from a judgment is not part of the judgment.
But it was dismissed with a condition, so it is a little different.
It is, Your Honor, but the condition is that you're going to change things and that refunds would be handled by operation of law, which the operable law here is 18061.
Okay. But let's go back to that's your argument for why it's not included.
Yes.
Come back to if we say no, we disagree with you on that. It doesn't seem to me we need to look past 214.
That'd be correct, Your Honor. If the court finds that this entire amount is the amount of the judgment, we'd be left with the timing argument under 214. Right. And the timing argument would be that 6214 establishes a mechanism for recoupment. The amount of the judgment is to be subtracted from amounts due to a taxing jurisdiction in the next fiscal year. and the affected jurisdictions must include their proportional share in their budgets for the next fiscal year. This is a prospective budgeting process. It's not a contemporaneous sweep of funds, which is what occurred here.
And let me ask you, because the last paragraph in the stipulations that the court requested, because they were incorporated in the judgment, that last paragraph says everything has to be done by December 31st, 2024, I believe it is. So within that fiscal year, it has to be completed. And the time frame would have been from the time the judgment was signed to December 31st.
Correct, Your Honor. And the district was not part of that stipulation. You can't, by stipulation, avoid the legislature's provision of how recoupment needs to be done. So if the county wanted to put itself in a bind and have a shortfall or have anything happen because they agreed to get these refunds to taxpayers so early, they couldn't then say, well, we don't care about the statute.
So has Maricopa County College District ever modified or amended its budget mid-year? Has it ever? Because I'm familiar with government entities, and they often have to change their budget after it's first adopted.
That'd be correct, Your Honor. I'm not aware of that, but...
But they can, right?
Under some circumstances, I believe so. However, in this case, when you have a the recoupment's happening, you know, day after day. So it's a little bit unpredictable.
Tough. I'm not saying it's not tough.
Right. And the legislature has a provision in here to prevent any shortfalls from occurring. You budget for it and you deal with it in the next fiscal year. That's what the legislature's guidance or mandatory guidance here is. And that's to protect the districts.
But so the district was in the next fiscal year because they didn't start until after July 1st. The judgment was entered in the 23-24 fiscal year, and they started taking the money in the 24-25 fiscal year.
So
that condition is met.
Well, not entirely, Your Honor. So the statute says the amount shall be subtracted from the amounts due to taxing jurisdictions in the next fiscal year.
Right.
Of the refunds.
If a judgment, no, it doesn't say in of the refunds. It does not say that there. It says if a judgment is awarded to a taxpayer who paid the taxes to the county treasurer, that's the event, A, then the amount shall be subtracted to the taxing districts in the next fiscal year.
Correct, Your Honor.
And that's what happened here.
Well, not entirely, Your Honor, because what actually happened was the amount was being subtracted at the same time, and so there was no prospective budgeting process occurring here.
That's the second sentence. I'm focused on the first. What happened here is there was a judgment in 2023-24, and the county turned around and asked your client to pay it back in the next fiscal year. And started collecting it in the next fiscal year.
Well,
tell me where factually that's wrong.
It's if Your Honor is reading it that way, that is how it played
out.
No,
I'm asking you, tell me factually if you think that the judgment didn't happen in 2023, or if you believe the amounts were not being subtracted in 24-25
fiscal years.
Yeah, I
tell
agree.
Tell me
with that,
where Okay.
So, but I think what Your Honor is missing is A2 in there, which says the amount of the judgment shall be subtracted from the amounts due to taxing jurisdictions. That doesn't mean I can just, if you are owed money from me, I can't take the money out of your pocket. And so
it was money that the county had that it was supposed to pay you, right? Or your client, I'm sorry. The county held this bucket. It was supposed to pay your client. That was due to your client. And when the time came to make that payment, the county said, no, we're keeping it because of the judgment, right? That's what happened.
That isn't what happened. There was a sweep of a sweep of funds that the district had that the county went in on funds already remitted to the district and took the funds. What this process sets up is we budget, and we're going to budget that there's a certain amount of bucket of money that the county has paid out that, yeah, we owe that overpaid amount of taxes. That amount due, which would be part of the budget process that is provided to the county treasurer, that amount is not paid to us because the county has paid that out. That's what this is talking about. The amount due, that language does not reflect a sweeping of money contemporaneously with paying the refund process. It recognizes a budgeting process where I say, county, you owe me $100, and 30 of those dollars relate to the amounts in the Kastenmeier judgment. You're not going to pay me those $30. That's what this recognizes. It doesn't recognize I'm taking that $30 now from you. It recognizes we're withholding that $30 that would otherwise be due to you because you have budgeted for it. It's a prospective budgeting process that recognizes, and again, the whole point of this process is the legislature recognizes that they don't want to put special taxing districts in a bind by sweeping money immediately that has not been budgeted for.
And I think, you know, it's not pretty. And it certainly was very difficult for your client. So don't mistake the questioning for anything not recognizing that. But it was in the next fiscal year. And your client is supposed to, once it learns of it, of course, it's not expected to budget for things it doesn't know about. And while it might have been nice if the county had told you, I'm not certain you're arguing it was required to. And so doesn't your client need to adjust its budget at that point?
Well, Your Honor, the issue here is that what Your Honor is not reading is subtracted from the amounts due to taxing jurisdictions in the next fiscal year. Due in the next fiscal year.
Right.
That's how that sentence is would be understood. The amount was not, the amount they took was already paid. It wasn't due.
Okay, and we'll hear from them on whether they disagree, because I'm not sure I saw that in the record of this, the clawback as opposed to the withhold.
Yes, and I think both parties agree. It was a simultaneous, contemporaneous sweep. We pay taxpayer, we take your money. Two hands doing the same thing at once.
Okay.
And in terms of what you're challenging about the sweep, are you only challenging the sweep of the interest because that's what at issue here, or you're challenging the sweep of the entire amount?
The entire amount, because the entire amount needed to go through the legislature's budgeting process here, what the legislature set up under both statutes. It, you know, the other 18061 recognizes a credit and then a budgeting process. It's similar, a similar scheme here. And so we are challenging the interest only on 18061, not on any amounts that were part of the judgment. And then we're challenging the whole amount with regards to just...
So is it your position that if they didn't meet 18601, they're done? They don't ever get to recoup from your client?
In what sense, Your Honor?
Well, I'm just trying to understand where you're headed. Is it your position if they couldn't use 214 and they didn't comply with 18061... they can still get the recoupment?
Yes, Your Honor. And they just need to follow the process that the legislature has set forth by statute. The county can't ignore it. And that's part of the issue here. And I see I'm limited on time, so I'll reserve the remainder of my time for
sure.
Rebuttal. Thank you.
Counsel, I want to just suggest that you do focus on the whether monies were clawed back from the previous fiscal year versus monies due in the next fiscal year.
Sure, Your Honor, and may it please the court, Patrick Irvin for Maricopa County and the county treasurer. I think the district has conceded that that the county can recoup the tax money. They've conceded that the county can recoup interest that on the judgment to the extent it deals with the change years. So truly the issue about money is about the subsequent years. But those concessions really resolve the case because The statutes are looked at as a whole. The cases that have interpreted these statutes and similar ones are look at what's the purpose, what's the context. The context is, you know, making sure taxpayers get refunds. The next fiscal year discussion actually is designed more, it's to protect the taxpayers. You know, as the Peabody Coal versus Navajo County case that we cite in our pleading show, that sometimes taxpayers have had trouble getting money back. And the counties have deferred and deferred, saying it's not in our budget, it's not in our budget. So the command to include in the next fiscal year is really an order to the counties to make sure it's paid. The provisions that allow it to be paid out of current money gets them paid even quicker. And it's not a design to be a protection for the political subdivisions. What happened here is that, as their complaint notes, they learned about this, I think, around June 6th of 2024. That was in the same fiscal year, which ends June 30th, as the judgment was signed. At that point, they certainly had time to adjust their budget.
Does it matter when they learned about it, or is it when the judgment was entered?
We've never thought it matters when it learns, but to the extent they argue that we need time to do a budget process, it does, because they had time to adjust their budget for the next fiscal year. They had time to change their tax rate.
But when the next fiscal year starts in 20 days, I mean, is that really enough time to adjust their budget?
Absolutely. You know, it may require special meetings and things like that, but a number of jurisdictions actually adapted their tax rates, which is included in our stipulations. The mechanism sometimes, if tax refunds affect you, then you can raise your taxes in the next year to offset. And that's the provision in the statutes for you can increase your taxes beyond the budget limitations, either the statutory budget limitations or the constitutional budget limitations. So if you have to pay refunds and you were at your maximum tax rates because of limitations, you can adjust to collect more in the next year. And that's the mechanism the legislature provided to smooth over this. But the next fiscal year demand really is designed to protect the taxpayer. And in this case, the judgment was signed in one fiscal year. As the tax court found, all these refunds were paid in the next fiscal year, and any recoupment happened in the next fiscal year. So to that extent, the statute was complied with. The statute talks about...
What about the A2 argument that your friend was just discussing with us, that the A2 talks about the amount of the judgment, so it'll be subtracted from the amounts due to taxing jurisdictions in the next fiscal mm-hmm. year, and he suggests that everybody agrees here that there was instead a sweep of funds. Mm-hmm. How do you square that with what you just said, that the statute was complied with?
I don't understand that argument at all in terms of a sweep of funds. The treasurer only has money that's going to the district. You know, to the extent there was money withheld, it was money the treasurer had, which was headed toward the district. You know, there was no clawing back from separate bank accounts. You know, that to the extent the treasurer has money, and again, it talks about due to, it doesn't say, you know, unlike A1, where it talks about paid from current or the tax receipts for the next fiscal year, or if current money is available, you know, it talks about amounts due to the taxing jurisdiction. Money's pretty fungible, you know, in terms of, to the extent the county treasurer had funds that belonged to the district, that was held, you know, in terms of it was taken in order to fund this as the legislation.
So you disagree factually with his assertion that these monies were swept from money that had already been paid to the district? I thought that's what I heard him say.
I don't think anything was taken back, you know, other than the treasurer has an account for the district, and it's sort of an account. The money comes in, it's assigned to a fund for the district, and then it's ultimately paid out for the district. So, you know, to the treasurer has no authority to reach into the district's bank account. I don't even know if the district has separate bank accounts. That's not in the record.
You know, so the process is there's the big pile of money, mm-hmm. the big account, and then it gets subdivided, and that money in the Maricopa County pot is due to the district yeah. at that point. And the county treasurer, do we know? I don't think it's in the record how often the treasurer does that transfer.
Well, with electronics, things happen quickly, you know, and this is things have changed. But in terms of, like, we cite the Ray School District case. If you read the Ray School District, it talks about citing a Colorado case where the court said a county can protect itself by bookkeeping entries, you know, because the money flows through the county to the political subdivisions. What happens here is the county, for the benefit of the taxpayers, is responsible for dealing with taxpayers. They don't have to deal with multiple jurisdictions. And so the county has to pay. But there's no statutory authorization or requirement that the county absorb a cost that really belongs to the district. It's important to remember here that the county is acting as the agent for the political subdivisions. That's been established under the statutes. It was specifically cited in the Hodgson case back in 1935. It's acting as the agent. The district imposes its own property tax. It sets the rate. It decides whether to have one or not. And then the county implements it as the agent for the district. And it collects the money and pays it to the district. This is a reverse where the statutes have said, you know, if you have to pay a refund, there's recoupment from the districts. Sometimes even if the statutes don't say so, the cases show that the Supreme Court has consistently found that the county gets recoupment whether the statutes are real clear or not. That was the Ray School case. There was a state statute that said you can recoup from the state. There was no statute that said you could recoup from political subdivisions. The court specifically said in interpreting these statutes, we're not going to interpret silence as saying there's a different rule. And that's been the consistent rule that's been applied. And to the extent the legislature has adopted statutes, it has never done anything that's inconsistent with that general rule. There's nothing in the statute that says the county has to absorb the interest.
So let me ask you a question, because I want to really the process and come back to that. Mm-hmm. Is there any evidence in the record that there was money due to the school district that the county had in July that it didn't make a payment that was due and held it over to August? I didn't see it.
There's nothing in the record.
So the only thing that's before us is the county had money that was due to the district in August, mm-hmm. and that's the money that it withheld. Mm-hmm. No suggestion there was a delay in making payments to stack it into the next fiscal year or anything like that.
Yeah, nothing in the record about that.
Okay. As I said, the money was paid out of the holding pot that the county had, then that's what was swept.
Right.
If you want to use that word. Mm-hmm. That money was swept out as part of the recoupment.
It was withheld. It was recouped.
It was withheld. And that's the other word to use.
And you could say, as the Ray School District,
subtracted from
that it's a bookkeeping entry. I don't know if debits or credits come first, but in terms of it's a bookkeeping entry that truly reduced it. The Ray School case is very relevant and informative because it shows some of the complexity of the process, but the statutes that we're talking about were adopted in 1970, which was after Ray School. And a lot of the language about proportionality, accounting, credits comes exactly from that opinion. You know, and in terms of the Supreme Court saying, you know, this is the general rule, that the county acts as the agent for the districts, all the political subdivisions, all 1,700 in Maricopa County. And therefore, to the extent it passes on the money, if it has to refund it, it's really refunding the district's own tax. And that's why the interest applies, because the statute talks about interest on the refund. The refund is made by the county as the agent for the district, but the interest is on the refund that the district has to pay. And so it makes sense that the district is liable for all that interest.
And that's consistent with case law going back about 100 years.
Absolutely.
Maybe even further.
Absolutely. The legislature could change it, but it has not.
So question, counsel. What if we don't go down the road that we've been discussing? What if we don't believe that second portion, paragraph 14, mm-hmm. Makes those payments part of the judgment? What do we do with 18061? And I think I understand your mm-hmm. argument that case law still says the interest pays mm-hmm. that, and you're welcome to rehash that a bit if you want. Yep. But I'm really talking about what happens under 18061. What do we need to harmonize? Yep. And it's really that next accounting period, I think, is the problem.
And you have, as you recognize, you have several pathways to go. One is that it's included in the judgment. As counsel recognized, it was the same judge who signed Casimar and the judgment in this case. That judge certainly knows what was intended. The conditional part, I would hate to argue to that judge or this court that judgment didn't require the county to pay refunds, and certainly when it comes to interest. But even if you don't say it's part of the judgment, that just kicks it over to 18061, which actually does not mention interest at all. You know, so to the extent they've conceded that a taxpayer gets interest, it's not under that statute. It's under, again, 100 years of history where you apply statutes that may not look like they apply, but they apply. And in fact, the interest portion in the prior statute wasn't added until 1979. But, you know, in terms of all those intervening years from the 20s to 1979, interest was paid because the Supreme Court in a 1931 case had said, the prior statute said it, we're going to apply it even though the statute doesn't say. But in 1806 Watt, again, it relates very much to the Ray School case in talking about bookkeeping entries, talking about accounts, talking about a credit. A credit is very different theoretically from taking money that's due or deducting from amount due, because a credit certainly sounds like a bookkeeping entry. And in terms of what the next accounting is, there's never an attempt to define what that is. You know, electronically, I think it happens every minute, every day, you know, all the time.
Is it defined anywhere? Is there any place? Because part of our job is to understand what a statute means. What is next accounting, period?
I think the next accounting, given the lack of a definition, is the next time the county tells the district how much money they have. You know, is that every day? It doesn't say. The district wants to interpret it as the next fiscal year, but that's not what it says. The only reference to next fiscal year in that statute is by saying the board has to pay from current monies, or if not, the monies are not available, the Board of Supervisors, shall budget for the refund of the next fiscal year. As I said, that's designed to protect, say, taxpayer from the board putting it off year after year.
And
that's
it's actually
a Band-Aid.
In two places in that statute, three places, fiscal year. So,
well, the other section says the fiscal year. It doesn't say next
fiscal
year.
But they refer to fiscal year.
Yeah.
So but, the legislature knows how to use the term fiscal year and how to refer to current fiscal year, the fiscal year, or the next fiscal year. And that's not what it said in that particular line. It said, shall be entitled to a credit for refunds in the next accounting after the repayment.
Right. Which is undefined. And it just means that it's sort of a budget thing for
how would
when
we
it's done.
How would we infer that the legislature meant fiscal year there when it's used fiscal year in several other places but not there?
I don't think you would. I don't think the legislature intended it to be a mandate for the credit in the next fiscal year. The credit is the next accounting. And that could be daily, monthly, whenever the county treasurer accounts to, provides information to about, you know, here's the money that you were entitled to. And this doesn't even refer to credits for property tax revenues. It could be any money. But it's it just recognizes that to the extent the treasurer has money that has been paid on for a refund or interest, the treasurer can credit it in. And the affected political subdivision can include in their budgets for this fiscal year, whenever the refund's paid. That's not next, it's not last, it's the fiscal year. And so to the extent you want to be very precise, and as I say, some of these cases have not been overly precise. In fact, they've said, we're going to look at the overall structure, we're going to see what works, we're not going to play gotchas with, oh, you didn't mention interest here. If it's the Hill case where it talked about subsequent years, subsequent taxes included interest. Because that just made sense. And that's really how the courts have applied these statutes. They've been adopted over 100 years, and, you know, for various reasons. You know, the context, again, is when a lot of these statutes were adopted, it was really hard to get refunds. You had to jump through all sorts of hoops. You know, until the 1980s, often people couldn't get refunds if they didn't exactly follow the rules. And so the context was to allow refunds and to protect the taxpayers more than it was to protect the political subdivision. As it was, the treasurer did exactly what the treasurer was supposed to do, which is process these refunds that were ordered by the court for the change years and for subsequent years, deduct the amounts from the amounts due or credit the amounts to the political subdivisions. There's no argument about what the rationale would be for the distinctions the district
just
makes.
Just to follow up on Judge Goss's hypothetical, if we're in the land of 16214 not applying, and we're looking at maybe 18061. Just to clarify, is your point is there's no textual, there's no statutory basis for interest at that point. We're looking at Supreme Court precedent going back a long time. Is that right?
I think the statutory basis is in the other statute, which
apply.
Everyone has applied. You know, I think the language in the other statute, which, as I say, was added in 1979, has uniformly been applied to tax refunds. And the case, 1931 case, I think it's cited in Questar and Hodgson, you know, the United Verdi case. It said that it was in the statute, then the recodification 1928 took it out, but we aren't implying that we aren't going to interpret that as a change of purpose. So for 60 years, interest was paid, whether the statute said so or not, you know, and because that the court said that would be the rule. So the statutory basis is there. The legislature has authorized it. Certainly they've put it in the other statute, and that shows the interplay between the statutes. This is a whole system, and you know, it may not gel perfectly every time, but in this case, they've conceded that the tax that they can are due for the recoupment for the taxes, and they've conceded that they're due for the recoupment for the interest on the years of change. And that really carries over, as I said. In the Ray School, you don't interpret silence as changing the general rule.
So I'm going to sort of change it up a little bit here and just ask this question that's been on my mind. 18061 starts with, if a change is made in the tax roll pursuant to law. That could be read to say that only the legislature changes law. And therefore, my question would be, is there an interest issue when the law changes? And therefore, does interest accrue under that statute? Mm-hmm. Because if the law just changes, there's no sort of overpayment of tax. Mm-hmm. The law changes and changes the tax roll. And therefore, because someone may have paid taxes ahead of time and therefore they're due, but your position is there still due interest, even though that statute doesn't allow for it based on the case law that's out there. Am I right?
I would disagree with the part about doesn't allow for it. It certainly doesn't prohibit it. It just is silent. And so the way it's been interpreted is that the interest provision in the other statute applies to this. In the error correction statutes, which are in Title 42 as well, it specifically provides for interest as well. So it's always been interpreted as interest is going to be due, you know, going back to 1931, on overpayments.
But when we look at the other statute, I'm sorry, the numbers, 16-14, mm-hmm. That one specifically provides for interest, which makes sense to me because it's related to judgments. Mm-hmm. And we have a long history of interest accrues on judgments. Yeah. Correct?
Oh, yes. And in fact, that was part of the rationale of the Supreme Court in saying interest applies, because it would have applied to private people.
Right.
And the court in several of the decisions talks about we're not going to create separate rules for it. But as originally enacted, that statute did talk about change of the tax rolls according to statute, but it's been changed as to law. You know, here, I think...
I'm sorry, no, if you're finishing your answer to her, I thought you were moving on.
I'm going to make it to a moot point, but go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. I want to just, there's no dispute from your side or their side, I don't think, that interest may be paid owed to the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. What I get thing is they're saying then it's not up to them to have to reimburse the interest. They only have to reimburse the overpaid taxes is part of how I was understanding it. Under this, how do you respond to that? That even if they're owed, mm-hmm. this statute doesn't allow the recoupment of the interest.
I think the statutes governing this area, as interpreted by the Supreme Court over 100 years, have said refund will include whatever you have to pay back, including the interest. So to the extent the statute talks about refund, it's not going to be limited to just that, particularly in light of the other statute where interest has plainly been allowed. Again, this is like Ray School, where the argument was one statute requires the state to reimburse, but there's no statute that requires the political subdivision to reimburse. So that should be a difference. And the court said, no, it's not a difference, because the process says you make your agent whole. And that's why the agency aspect is important, because, again, the interest is being paid on a refund that's really the district's liability. The county and the treasurer act as that district agent in refunding the tax. The statute talks about interest on the refund. That includes the payment that was made, and the agent is entitled to recouping that money from the body that had the money during the time. You know, the county didn't keep this money. My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you. And before we start the clock, counsel, I'll give you one moment. Do you agree? Is that your argument, that even if interest is owed, it's not a the district isn't obligated to pay it under the statute?
Correct.
Okay. Right. Go ahead. I just, since that was just a, I wanted to cover that.
So I wanted to address a few things. First, you know, Judge Goss, earlier you mentioned the, if the legislature knows how to use certain words and include certain things, it does so. That's a well-recognized principle. And yet my colleague went on and said, but, you know, you look at that statute, which is under a different regime. Look at 16214. It mentions interest. So, of course, there's interest, even though 18061 doesn't. That's completely inapplicable with that principle, that the it's the omission of interest is really dispositive here. And Hancock, the Associated Dairy Products cases, all those cases recognize the county can't do something unless the legislature tells it it can. It can't recoup interest under a change of the tax rolls from special taxing districts unless there's a statute that says it can.
So under that line of argument, how do we decide next accounting is the same as fiscal year and not something different?
So I do think next accounting, there's, when you look at the statute, there is a process set up where it recognizes that there is a section, A4 discusses, including in their budgets for the next fiscal year, the proportional amount of the refund for which each is liable. And I think if you read accounting to be an instantaneous thing that occurs at all times, that makes no sense. That why are we budgeting for something that we've already had?
Well, and it is for the fiscal year. It's not for the next fiscal year.
Right, for the fiscal year.
So it's for the fiscal year, which could be the same, which, you know, seems to be the same fiscal year, since it's used that term in several ways. Sometimes it's current year, sometimes it's next fiscal year. Here it's the year, fiscal year.
Right.
So under that understanding, why wouldn't it allow to, you know, say, okay, you just have to adjust your budget?
Well, I still think we're dealing with the issue of what a credit means. When you talk about a credit for refunds, that envisions, I mean, when you have a credit card, you're not giving permission for the issuer of that credit card to immediately sweep your funds. That's the whole purpose. You have a statement. There's something that occurs, and you budget it for something, and there's a forecasted budgeting process that's occurring when A3 talks about a credit. And so to recognize and also to just speak to my colleague's reference that he's not sure if the district even has an account, I will direct the court to App 0033, App 053, where paragraph 31 and paragraph 33 discuss the district's account. The record before.
Could you repeat the numbers again?
Sure. App 0033, which is the stipulation the parties entered into, paragraphs 31, 33, and then App 53, which recognizes the district's funds. I mean, these aren't the county's funds. That's not the record before the court. This is the district's funds. And so I think that matters. But my time has expired.
Can I have one more question?
You can.
So on those documents in the appendix,
yes.
Were they part of the record below?
Yes, they were the stipulation. The parties wanted to make this as simple as possible. We stipulated to a bunch of facts, and these are the facts stipulated to, including that the treasurer, on or about August 5th, 2024, the treasurer began taking money from the district's account.
Okay.
Not
I just
the
wanted
county's
to make sure
account.
It was part of the record.
Thank yes. And also paragraph 33, which talks about the district's account as well. So with that, Your Honors, I urge the court to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take the matter under advisement. Thank you for your arguments. We appreciate the time and effort put in, and we'll issue our decision in due course.